Successful people learn how to make their mind work for them. I'm David Nagel, and this is the Successful Mind Podcast.
One of the things that, the thing that I want to talk about today is how to spot opportunity. I think that hopefully we're all ready to, if you haven't already gone out and really decided how you are going to be a benefit during this time, that you will after this call. I want to talk to you about the psychological aspect and the laws around opportunity and compensation, and how, what it is that we need to be thinking, and what do we need to be looking for and doing in order to find people to help and to expand and grow our businesses. I think that it's probably really appropriate at this point in the crisis to start looking long-term with this. And let me give you the psychological benefit to that. There's still a tremendous amount of unknowns. This is, while our country is currently saying we may have reached our peak and we're going to be on the backside coming down, it still looks like we're in for a long haul. And it still looks like it's going to be very different than what we thought coming out of this. So having that idea, and accepting that idea, allows us to adapt and innovate and let go of, I wish things were the way that they were before, and really be present in what's going on so that we can really benefit from the opportunity to both help people and advance ourselves through this. So I keep encouraging people to really think about, like, what if this goes on for a year or 5 years? Or what if it was to never go back to exactly the way that it was? At some point, you would have to adapt to it. At some point, you'd have to let go of the hope that things were the way that they were. And the benefit to that thinking is primarily this. The people that are traditionally first out of the gate with something like this, the ones who innovate, the ones who set the standards, the one who sets the kind of like the range of motion, the track that we all go down to adapt in various different areas as a business and life, are the ones that are going to build huge businesses. They're the ones that are going to continue to innovate their own businesses. They're going to be a leader in the community, and they're going to be a leader in their own company. They are going to expand beyond imagine, because they're ready, they're not stuck in the freeze that we've talked about so often, but they're really into, let's do this thing. Let's accept this and figure out how we're going to take advantage of the situation and really benefit on the outside of it. So having said that, we're going to talk about how to spot opportunity. Number one is how to think in a certain way. And how to think in a certain way is primarily understanding, which I'm going to go through here in a minute. It's the first principle of the science of getting rich, the very first principle in the science of getting rich. And it is really, how do we use our mind in a very specific way to open up the pathways that we need to communicate what it is that we have to offer. Number two is the law of compensation. And there is an exact law to the law of compensation. I think I mentioned on a previous, one of the previous calls that we did, that there's a lot of things that are called the law of compensation, but the way that they're written, it's not an exact law. This actually is the way that I'm going to explain it. And I think you'll see a great benefit in that explanation. And number three, the impression of increase. The impression of increase is really understanding the scientific aspect of all of life, and how do we harmonize ourselves to that so that people see us as an opportunity to advance themselves forward and they don't see us as something that would be a detriment or that they're not interested in. So I put all three of these together for a reason. And the primary reason is that we've already established that the channels of distribution have changed. So we have to make sure that everything is in accordance with that idea. If there's any remnants left in our mind about the way things used to be, we actually send mixed signals out into the universe, right? So we'll get into that here in a second when we get into how to think in a certain way. Okay, so let me talk about this for a minute. Programmed in our unconscious mind are the ways that we react to life. It's millions upon millions upon millions of bits of information that is reinforced year after year after year. And it's reinforced in a way where it's knowledge that is passed down to us from the people that raised us and educated us and spiritually educated us and educated us basically in every way. And what they said was, here's life and all the parts of life, and here's how you interact with life, and here's how you move through life without too much upset in your life. Hopefully, that's kind of the idea. It's rare that the masses, it doesn't happen with the masses, but it's rare to the individual that somebody in your life really grabs you at a young age and says, listen, I'm going to teach you how to have an amazing life that's full of love and abundance and freedom of expression and you creating your life the way that you want to. And I'm going to show you how to do that. We don't usually hear anything like that as children. So it constantly is reinforced in our mind. And now that we know so many of the obvious unconscious thoughts, like people have money stories and people have intimacy stories and people have relationship stories and the difference between wealth and the middle class or the lower class, like there's a lot of stories that have been at the surface for a long time that we're all aware of, but other stories aren't, and they don't get talked about much. Because there hasn't been a need to talk about them. And one specifically that I've pulled out for this today is the idea that we have an unconscious expectation for how something is supposed to come to us. And I've called it channels of distribution. So we receive and we distribute in our life through channels of distribution. And I don't think that many people really think about all the channels of distribution that they've accepted unconsciously as how something is supposed to get to them. So it always made sense to me when I was teaching people about the science of getting rich that they needed to create new channels of distribution from a business perspective so that money could flow to them easier. And I think a lot of people understand that also. Whether that's a business or you have multiple sources of income, or if you're doing real estate, or if you're making money work for money, like in the stock market, stuff like that. That's pretty common knowledge for most individuals, that those are different channels of distribution that people that are seeking to create wealth in their life very frequently use. And there's been all kinds of courses and teaching on those things for a very long period of time. But even the people that are working in those levels have to learn to think differently about channels of distribution. And I always thought it was very interesting that in Wallace Waddell's great creation of a book, The Science of Getting Rich, that he wrote in the early 1900s, that the very first principle, or what he called the first principle of The Science of Getting Rich, was this three sentences. So check this out. Every thought of form that is held in the thinking substance causes the creation of that form. And always, or at least generally, along lines of growth and action already established. So I don't think that that group of that little paragraph there has ever been more relevant to understand than today, than right now, during this transformation that we're making as a human species. Because it is very true that automatically, without really considering the lines of distribution in our life, when we think about something, we have an unconscious expectation of how it's actually going to get to us. And he says that every thought of form. Now, what is a thought of form? Well, a thought of form is, well, I'll show you on the board here. So you have an image of what that actually looks like and how it works. If we're going to create what he's calling a thought of form, what we're doing is we're using one of our intellectual faculties known as our imagination. That's one of the intellectual faculties. And we're creating an image in our conscious mind of what we want. And today we're basically talking about money. We're talking about wealth. We're talking about riches. We're talking about creating more of that in our life. So we all have an individual idea based on how we want to enrich our own life, what the image is that we're going to build in our conscious mind and that we're going to hold with another part of our intellectual faculties, which is the will, which is our ability to focus. So we're really engaging two very important ones here. Imagination, I'll just write them down. Imagination and will, which means focus. And we're using both of those to transmit that image out into the universe. So we're transmitting the image out into the universe. And he said that it's held in the thinking substance, which is spirit or energy, and causes the creation of that form. So if you go back to an earlier call, I talked about one of the laws being the perpetual law of transmutation of energy. And that means that energy is always moving from a non-form to a form and into form. So a non-form is the energy or spirit that is outside of us, that is constantly flowing to and through us. When it flows into us, we give it form. We give it form by building the image of what it is that we want. And then through the proper use of the emotions and action, we then turn it into form as a result in our life. But here's the thing. When we do this, we already have a predetermined expectation of how it's going to come to us. We understand how we give our benefit out and how it actually comes back. Today, we have to really consider the idea that we can't expect it to come in the same way that it did before, and not realizing that most of us are actually still expecting it to come in another way without putting any conscious effort into it at all. And I think it's really important because it's an unconscious process. It's like when Steph and I do blind spot training. One of the ideas in our blind spot training is helping a person find out what their blind spot is. In other words, they're being, doing, or having something in their life that they don't know what that is, but it's literally causing a block for the good that they desire to come in. It can't come in, and they can't see it because they have a psychological blind spot. And a blind spot is exactly that. It's a blind spot. You don't know that you don't know, or you can't see what you can't see, so you need somebody else to help point out what that possibly could be. How does a blind spot occur? Well, a blind spot occurs in the mind when we attach two points of cause and effect together as how we've experienced something in our life, but they actually don't go together. So it's like we do this all the time. There's probably millions of things in our life that we have attached together, but they don't actually go together. In seminars, I call this the Santa Claus factor. Like many, many people have been raised with the idea of Santa Claus, and basically the idea around Santa Claus is that if you're a good little boy or a good little girl, you'll get gifts on Christmas. And the truth is that being good has nothing to do with what it is that you receive in life, like, especially from a monetary aspect. It is not the cause that makes money flow into anyone's life. Good is not the causation of the receiving of money. It just isn't. But if we connect those things at a part of our life when we're unaware, then our unconscious approach to life is, if I'm just a good boy or I'm just a good girl and I show up and I do my job every day, I will make more money. And then we think to ourselves, I'd like to be a millionaire. I'd like to be a multimillionaire. But unconsciously, we're approaching it not from emotional maturity and understanding the process of becoming wealthy, but we don't realize we're attaching an unhealthy or an the cause and effect is incorrect. It's an incorrect cause and effect that we have actually made an unconscious attachment to in our mind. And right now, we all have, myself included, like I have to work on this every day, we all have an unconscious element in the cause and effect of how things come to us. So when we have that in our mind, it presupposes that the good that we desire is going to come through some perceived channel of distribution that it has come through before. And of course, when you're talking about business, there's a lot of different aspects to business, right? You have marketing, you have advertising, you have the idea, the implementation of an idea. You have people that are handling the advertising, the marketing, the sales, the electronic aspect of it, where it's being seen, how it's being seen, what are the reactions to those things being seen. So there's all these little points of cause and effect that have to come together like perfectly in order for the whole thing to begin to work. And a lot of you may know that as what we call testing in business. Like we test ideas, we test strategies, we test procedures, we test campaigns, and we see, are they working in a cause and effect correlation with each other to get the desired result? Today, we're understanding that when we unconsciously put something together, we have to really double check to make sure that unconsciously we're not expecting something to come in a way that it can't get to us today because the rules have changed. So it is very important when we get to the second piece of this, which is the law of compensation, because that how we approach the law of compensation really determines how we view the landscape in order to find opportunity and how we adjust that idea of cause and effect of the image that we're holding along a certain line, how we actually view it so that we can see the opportunity that is actually out there. Because that's the idea. If you can't see the opportunity, you can't take advantage of it. We've talked a lot about making sure that emotionally we're in the right place to see the opportunity so that we're staying in gratitude and it opens up our mind. We talked about practices that we can do that keep us in a good place of being able to see the opportunity, not having the whole world fall in on ourselves, and we can't see how to help anybody else. We've talked a little bit about the idea of emotionally lifting yourself to the place where your own self-worth is not getting in the way. In other words, very often a person will be the recipient of something like this crisis. It happens in their life. And if their worth is built into how they do something and they can no longer do it the way that they did it yesterday, they now don't think that they have any worth to give because they can't see based on a cause and effect basis how it's going to help the end user, how it is going to potentially benefit their client. That doesn't mean it's true. What it does mean is that they inappropriately put a cause and effect together that don't necessarily go together. But in their mind, it worked. The way that they were doing things before happened to go along with that pattern, and it didn't actually prevent it in any way, because being in person is a way for us to communicate. It is a way for us to receive. So if everybody buys into that same belief, then we'll operate on that same pattern. And many people will think that the value is that pattern itself, but it's not. That pattern is just a modem of distribution in a given time frame that allows the good that we desire to get to us. But the real benefit, the real value, is in the service that's being provided and how that service actually benefits the end user. So it can become very easily mixed up in a person's mind that the value is actually the form of distribution itself. And I suppose that is very important in maybe companies like Amazon or something. But if you're not actually in the distribution business itself, where maybe convenience is the real factor of value in that distribution, then it probably doesn't matter as much until it becomes a blind spot and a person gets kind of paralyzed by the idea that they can't actually provide any value because they can't deliver or receive in the same way that they used to. So the whole idea that we want to change is, how do we get that straight in our mind, and what do we look for out there in order to solve the problem and actually allow us to spot the opportunity that we want to spot? So I'm going to change this page now. Okay, let's take a look at the law of compensation. The law of compensation dictates that the amount of money you receive, the benefit that you give in the world, is equal to the need for what you do, your ability to do it, and the difficulty there will be in replacing you. And in most years that I've taught this for a long time, I've always brought it down to this fact. The need for what you do is out there, or you probably wouldn't be in business to begin with. And to overcome the difficulty there will be in replacing you as being a barrier, all the focus goes on your ability to do it. So the better you get at actually doing something, the more difficult it gets at actually replacing you. But also understanding that everybody can be replaced at some level of the game. But today we have to really consider the top one also, the need for what you do. Because the need for what you do, in the way that you've organized it in your mind, may have shifted dramatically. And it could be the need for what you do and how you actually do it, or what you do to do what you do. In other words, a lot of people are in situations where maybe their product or service is no longer relevant right now in the exact form that it's in, but all the education and knowledge that they have to create that product or service allows them to adapt it or adjust it slightly in order to meet the specification of the need that's in the world right now. So we really have to take a look at this, because I don't believe that anybody is really in a situation where they have nothing anymore. They have absolutely nothing. That is to say, I'm completely valueless. I was telling a group of people this morning, a homeless person can add value today. A homeless person can add value any day, but it's all about how we determine to think about the situation we're in and not have the situation itself dictate to us how we're going to think. Also, when I say that, it doesn't mean that you can go into the convenience of being in denial, because if you do that and say, well, I'm not going to make any of the changes relevant today, we can go into denial and refuse to adapt at all. And then we become victims of ourselves in that standpoint, that's not a good thing either. So let's take a look at your ability to do it. Really, based on the law of cause and effect, our ability to do something really determines several things. It determines, how does it determine the amount of wealth that we can actually bring into our life? Well, because the more we increase our ability to do something and we provide a service that adds value to another person's life, we can determine the value of what it is that we're offering based on our understanding of the value that it makes a change in someone's life. And whenever I'm teaching this, I always get the question, what if I can't put a financial value on how my product or service adds value to somebody else's life? And my answer is, you can always put a financial value on any product or service that you have in someone else's life. And here's the reason why. Products and services add value to another person's life in ways that allow them to extend their own value within their life. In other words, that's the reason why we don't build our own homes anymore and why we don't, you know, we don't farm ourselves anymore. We don't hunt anymore. We don't sew our own clothes anymore. Although I do understand that I'm hearing a lot of people are getting back to some of those things now that we can't do too much. Regardless of that, it allows us to live in a richer society of experiences so that we can take advantage of many more things and extend our personal service beyond our own physical consumption. So that's the purpose of money, by the way. That is the purpose of money, so that we can extend service beyond ourselves and so that it makes our life more comfortable, right? So it adds value, and at the same time, it extends service, and at the same time, it allows us to leverage time in our life so that it can make it more comfortable. All you have to do is look at whatever product or service you have and ask yourself the question, and you can even ask your clients the question, in what ways does this add value to your life? So it is either allowing a person to leverage their time, and however they earn money in their life, time could be broken down in, or money can be broken down into time based on hours per day. It can add comfort to their life. It can add ease to their life. It can remove burden from their life. It can do many, many things. And all of that comes down to the idea that whatever it is that it is benefiting them for, it is also basically saving them something in a financial perspective in some way. You just have to look at exactly what that is. So when we do that, we can actually bring a number to it. We can bring a very realistic number to all the different things in our life that money allow us to leverage so that we can actually do more in our life. That is a fantastic value that you have the ability to add to another person's life. And like I said, it's not just the product or service that allows you to add the value, but it's the end result that allows you to add that value. And your ability to do it produces the end result that creates the value. So there's more to just your product or service in a person's life and in your life, like in the way that you do business, the way that you create a product or service, the way you distribute it, market it, sell it, move it, implement it. There's all the skill and ideas around what you do that make that work for you in what we call a business, and make it actually function. So there's a lot of components in there that we're very knowledgeable about that people need right now, even if your very specific product or service is not meeting the number one part of this law, which is the need at this moment in time. So when we look at this and when we open it up for questions, I may open it up for questions a little bit early because I think a lot of people are going to have questions on this stuff. Let me see how long it takes to get through this. But the idea is that we have to be able to see the need. Look for the need that you can actually fulfill based on your ability to do it. Now, if we go back to what I talked about almost a half an hour ago in this call, we still have this down here, number three, that is a consideration. And it's the difficulty there will be in replacing you. Right now, is a huge time for opportunity, meaning that the slow to adapt can be wiped out very easily right now. There's too much of a mixture of volatility in order for a person to wait too long right now. And here's what I mean by that. If money is stopped, if you're in a situation where money has stopped coming in, but you have not stopped money going out, then you eventually, based on time, all of that money will be gone. If it goes for however long it needs, it's a math problem, however long it needs to go for, every day you have money going out, eventually there won't be anything left. So the idea is that if you keep waiting and waiting and waiting and the money goes out, when it is time, if it becomes time to return back to the old normal, you may not be in a situation to recover, and we could find out that the client base has actually shifted somewhere else. So I want to make this point very strongly right now. I'm very concerned about the amount of people in the world that are taking the pole position of, I'm just going to wait. I'm not doing anything. I'm not spending money. I'm not investing money. I'm not changing my business. I'm not looking for a job. I'm really not doing a damn thing. If you have a business, you serve customers. If you're not finding a way to serve those customers, somebody else is going to find a way. Because if there's one thing that we know about crisis in history, is that it breeds ingenuity. It completely breeds ingenuity. People that know how to think like they foam at the mouth when a crisis happens because they know it is an opportune time to really go in and benefit in this situation. And if you have a business, you need to be aware of that because there will be people that will be targeting your customers if you're not actually finding a way to provide them service. And if you also fall into the false thought that if I can't service them, everybody else in my industry can't service them either, you're just flat out wrong. You're in denial and you're really being ignorant if you're coming from that aspect. Everybody is finding an ingenious way to pivot what they do to provide service and keep businesses moving. And all you have to do is look a little bit through history and you'll see how true it is. The people that go out of business during this time are the ones that weren't able to think. When it boils right down to it, it's not what happened. It's not what happened to them. It's how they chose to react and respond in the situation. Remember, the law of polarity operates with this crisis, okay? And it's really interesting because my friend Gio has reminded me of something this morning that I know, but I haven't heard for a long time. The Chinese symbol for crisis means both danger and opportunity, which is basically the law of polarity. In a time of crisis, you have what is perceived to be really bad, but the opposite side of it is that it's really good. Well, who is it really good for? It's good for the people that can see the opportunity in the crisis. The people that buy into what the crisis dictates are the ones that lose. Every single time, they're the ones that lose. And what I say by what the opportunity dictates, I don't mean the idea that we have to shelter in place and that we have to be distant from everybody physically. And I don't mean like abiding by those laws or those rules. Like those are common sense when we're dealing with something, you know, that's basically a pathogen in life, right? So, I mean, that's just common sense. But I'm talking about how the rules of distribution, the rules of communication, the rules of how we show up in the world are temporarily put on pause. And if we fail to really consider how important that is, even for a short period of time, in a very short period of time, you could find out your business is gone by the mere act that you didn't do anything because you thought to yourself, I'm just going to wait right now. And in my waiting, everything will be okay. Nobody else can do anything anyway. And then when we come out of this, I'll just begin exactly where I was. The bigger probability is that you'll come out of this and somebody else will have found your client and they will actually be gone. And then you have a real problem. Here's another problem that goes with that if you get really stuck in that thinking. I've been having more and more of this conversation with people as the days go on. More and more people are saying, there's going to be a lot of things that don't go back to the way that they were. And I'm very much in agreement with that as we go through this. Because we're finding ways, not necessarily finding as much as accepting, like these ways have been here for quite some time now. We're accepting ways of doing things that are more cost effective than the way that we were doing them before. If you're in a company and you thought to yourself, I have to be in an office building to run that company, and you're now running it from your kitchen and everybody else is in their kitchen, you're finding out that belief that you staked your claim on is actually inaccurate, because now you're running it from your kitchen with everybody else being in their kitchen. So what's going to happen? Not in all cases, but in many, we're going to find out that when people go back to whatever we think the normal was, that there's going to be ways that people make changes because they realize they can do things that had tremendous overhead that by doing them on the internet, they virtually have none. And, you know, if you're spending tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars or maybe millions of dollars a year in overhead based on your belief in structure, basically, and you can find out or you can now accept a way of doing it where you remove that overhead, you could have huge percentage shifts in your profit go right through the roof. In many cases, a person will, I don't personally believe in doing this, but there's a lot of people that do. There's a lot of people out there that will be able to undercut the competition because they now have the ability to underbid or underprice the competition out there because they don't have the overhead that was causing them to have inflated prices to begin with. And that is coming from the idea that it's a forced acceptance for a lot of companies. It really is a forced acceptance. I talk to people every day that never thought that this would happen, that had very staunch beliefs in the way that it needed to happen to be successful, and you absolutely couldn't do what they were doing on the internet over Zoom or whatever. And now they're finding out that it was just their mind was stuck in that place of that belief. It was too uncomfortable to change, excuse me, voluntarily. And plus, everybody else kind of went along with the belief also, so nothing changed. But now they're in a place where they're forced to accept it. And the bottom line becomes the bottom line. So the other interesting thing is that we have this, however big your computer screen is, if it's 9x11 or whatever the dimensions of your computer screen are, it's a very focused portal of information. And within the focus of that portal of information, it is kind of forcing our focus into ways to find around problems to get to the end consumer. This is why I'm saying people that are very dialed in right now, that are in expansion mode, they're not in crisis mode, they're not in self-preservation mode, they're in expansion mode. What they're going to do is they're going to find a way to get to your client. That's what they're going to do. They're going to find a way to provide service. They're going to find a way to meet their needs. They're going to follow the law of compensation and adapt it to the world that they're in. So the law of compensation is the need for what you do, your ability to do it, and the difficulty there will be in replacing you. And right now, if you're not doing anything, there's no difficulty in replacing you because you're not being competitive. You're not being competitive in the sense that there's no place else for that need to be met, because what it does is it almost force flows the need that's out there into the people that are standing out there with a wide open net saying, come to me, I can service your problem. And I can service, you know, as big as they want to make it. There's people that are hiring right now because they have found ways to service problems where other people in their industry aren't doing anything. They're just sitting on their hands. So we have to shift how we're thinking about this in order to find the problem, service the problem, and accept the new ways of distribution in our life. So let me go through this part again. The first law in the science of getting rich, the first principle, I should say, not law, the first principle is this. Every thought of form, the image that you're holding in the head of what you want, in your head of what you want, that is held in the thinking substance, that is the proper use of your will or focus in order to communicate your thought intelligently to spirit, the universe, or energy, causes the creation of that form in a physical substance based on the perpetual law of transmutation of energy, instantly harmonizes and starts to bring down what you want into your life. So you want to make sure that that channel is completely clear, okay? And it's doing it along established lines of growth. So right now, you have to understand opportunity moves like water in this situation. So before, we had all these different companies out there that presented, say, boulders in a stream. And some water would get stuck behind each boulder and create giant ripples. What is that? That's all the competition of other companies out there right now competing for the same business in the same space. But when 80% of those companies can't think their way through a problem because they've never had to think through a problem like this before, the other 20% of those companies, all they have to do is widen their net. That means allow themselves to receive the business because the need is not going to go away. Those people out there still need those products and services. And they're thinking about how all I have to do is I have to create a way for that need to be seen. So it's kind of like, I got to get the hell out of my own way. I have to find out where is the consumer, create a way to be seen, match my message to their need so that they understand it and make it easy for them to come in. And when it's easy for them to come in, they're not really going to pay so much attention to the person that's not doing anything because their need supersedes their loyalty. Now, I want you to really think about that right now. Their need will supersede their loyalty. Loyalty is very much a figment of kind of an improperly used imagination, if you want to know the truth. And the reason that I say that is because it's never absolute. You can see a person loyal to another company for a long, long time, but if the right thing changes at the right time, bam, that person will shift their loyalty instantaneously and they will go somewhere else. We see it happen every single day. Most people stay loyal because it feels good. Well, if they stay loyal because it feels good, when it doesn't feel good anymore, they won't stay loyal. It's not really that. I'm talking about loyalty to like two people doing business, okay? That's the only aspect I'm using this word in. If it doesn't feel well, they're going to go where it does feel well. They're going to go where they get that need met, right? And right now, there's a lot of fear that is backed behind people's needs. So they have needs, they're in fear, they want to get those needs met, and all they need is the right person at the right time to make it easy for them to get that need met, and then that's where they're going to go. And if those companies do an outstanding job for those people, they will win over that so-called loyalty so that when things do start back up, most of those people will not go back to where they were before. And very, very, it's very likely that those companies that didn't do anything will actually be outdated, even if it's only 6 months from now, because enough will have changed and adapted to the way that the world is going. And if they haven't made those changes, they'll literally be outdated and it'll only be 6 months. And they'll play hell catching up because it's more of a mindset shift in how they're doing business than a technological shift. Remember what I said, the components that we're currently using, we've had them. right? We've had them for some time. We've been able to do business like this for some time. There are some things that are changing, but nothing yet has been that crazily significant to be like, oh, this is completely new. We've never seen anything like this before. It's just that the components that we're currently using are adapting to a heavier flow of customers for technological purposes. So it's, you know, that stuff has been here for a long time. The idea is if it was a technological change, they would have made the change a long time ago. The internet's very interesting in how it has caused people to change over a long period of time. People actually have slowly adapted in different stages, of course, but actually slowly adapted over time based on the push of technology to move us in one direction. And it happens for different reasons for different people. You always have the people that are on the edge of technology. They have to have the latest, the greatest, the fastest, the biggest, you know, the brightest, all of that. And, you know, more, and then it becomes contagious and more people end up changing, you know, from one phone to another phone to another phone, another computer, a different brand, and everything has its heyday and people continue to move and technology keeps driving that move down the line with also the idea that it becomes easier and faster for information to come into our lives. But that's voluntary. That is completely voluntary. The desire is created, and then the desire is created in the marketplace. And when the desire is created in the marketplace, the people then move toward that desire. Now you have people running away from the opportunity, which is growth. In a lot of cases, is not creating the desire for people. It is suggesting fear for a lot of people. But the ones that it is, the people on the edge that are being, they're like, they see the opportunity here. They're taking advantage of it. And today, what I'm here to say is that each and every person that's listening to this can take advantage of it. If you just understand that in many cases, the crisis may have hijacked your thinking. You may have allowed the crisis to put a box around you as to how you view the world, how you view your business, how you view the distribution of your business, how you view the abilities of your client. Very often we will lump people into the same box with us if it makes us feel safe, meaning that if we make a broad statement, if say I'm an attorney, all attorneys are going through this problem. All attorneys can't do this right now. It is a very foolish statement. It doesn't matter what business you're in. It's a very, very foolish statement because people are finding ways around the limitations. Otherwise, it becomes a self-imposed limitation. And we have a very difficult time turning that around when we actually created the illusion of a support group in our own damn box when there's actually not one there. We may know two or three people that are doing the same thing as us, but it's not everybody, I guarantee you. So we don't want to create that never-ending cycle of doom in our life. We want to realize that this is a time now, you know, hopefully in your life, the shock of this is over and you're starting to move into the adaptation phase of what's going on and then the innovative phase of what's actually going on. So what's our ability right now? What is your personal ability? How are you viewing your ability? When I was saying that very often the crisis has, what has done is it has put people in a box and has defined the rules and how they think about it. Now we have to take that back. If we've fallen into that at all, we have to take it back. We have to move into acceptance of what's going on. And we really have to ask ourselves, what is my ability to do it? If you don't know, what is the responsible thing to do? It's to ask for help. It is to ask for help. We have offered over and over again to do phone calls with anybody that actually needs help. We also have our coaching programs that allow people to get help if they need it, or go wherever you want to go. But you need to ask for help, okay? Because there are people out there, like we know what's going on, we know what's working, we know what's not working, and we can give you direction for what you're doing, and others can do the same thing. But don't just sit where you are and keep telling yourself the same story, you have to move forward in this situation and get the information that you need. Another thing that I'm hearing is, what if I don't want to work as hard? Now, that came as a response to something that I said on a specific call. What I said was, this may require that you have to double down in your effort for a period of time. The reason is because you're doing two things. On one hand, you want the company to move forward, but on the other hand, you have to adapt to what's necessary to do so. So it may be that you pull long hours for a little while in order to accomplish that. And I've actually had some pushback on that from a few people. And basically what they said was, what if I don't want to? And it's like, okay, then you don't want to. But you have to, when you say that you don't want to, you should really be considering the consequence of making that statement right now. As much as we did not think something like this would ever really happen, we have to understand the consequence of not doing something in this situation. For many people, it will be completely devastating for them. It's, you know, when I say rebuild, I mean, it's rebuild completely differently. You're still going to have to adapt, even if you stubbornly hold on to your view of I'm not changing, because it's forcing a change in our marketplace. So you will have to adapt to it at some point. And it is worse. It is so much worse for the human, for us spiritually, for us psychologically, for us emotionally, to have change forced on us than for us to actually look at a situation and decide, you know what, I want to change. I want to actually change. I want to offer myself up for change and step into it voluntarily versus having it forced on me and then me resisting and pushing back against it the whole way. I mean, that's not a pleasant experience for anybody. So the point is that you have control over that. That's your choice. How, you know, you can make this as good as you want it to be or as bad as you don't want it to be. That's the real truth. It's all about how you show up for this. Okay, well, last but not least, the impression of increase. So the impression of increase is psychologically and on a spiritual nature level, increase is the unconscious and genetic thing that all life is looking for. All human beings are looking for increase, okay? Now, let me explain this so we don't create a misconception around it. One of the laws of life is more life. Life is always moving toward increase. And because we have the ability to choose in life, the law of increase does not decide to which direction we choose it's going to go. It goes to whatever direction that we choose. What does that mean? If we choose something good and beneficial in our life, it will grow that. If we choose something dysfunctional and toxic in our life, it will grow that. The energy behind that doesn't have a choice in which direction it goes. It will go in either direction. The point of choice is with us. We're the point of choice. So when we make the choice, then it determines the direction that it goes. So if you have a life that is completely dysfunctional, it will only keep getting more dysfunctional. If you have a life that is really balanced, it is really proactive, it is really making a contribution, it will grow that, okay? Now, under the surface in our own thinking process, subconsciously, we're looking for the individual that can add to the specific choice that we make. If we make a bad choice, we're going to, like, let's say you're an alcoholic. You're going to have friends that are an alcoholic, right? You're going to hang out at the bar with the other alcoholics, right? You're going to hang out with people that you're in harmony with, right? No judgment. That's the way it works. If you're not, you're going to hang out with people that's not important in their life. Something else is important in their life, okay? So unconsciously, what are we looking for? People that can help us increase whatever direction that we're going in, period. This is really important Because most of the time, we do not realize that we're unconsciously looking for people that can add value in either a bad direction, which really seems silly, right? But it's true, and a good direction. So we become attracted to the individual that can add value to either one of those directions. That means that there is part of our psychological makeup gets developed to see that in the individual. We will see people and perceive people that can add value to our lives. Now, why is this important to know? Because it's important that you become one of those people. You want to become a person where everywhere you go, you exhibit the impression of increase on everybody that you touch, and hopefully for a good choice, right? Not a negative one. But the idea is this: we have this unconscious ability to be able to filter people out. And if you look at your mind like a series of rooms in your mind, let's say you have three of these rooms. One room is people that are not like you. And people that are not like you are really people that we don't know what to do with. All we know is that the identifying factor is that these people are not like me. Then we have people that are like me. Well, people that are like me, we do not perceive them to truly add value as far as increase to our life. However, we like them. So we're in harmony on a like basis, but we're not seen as value there, not for increase. Maybe value for harmony, you know, maybe value for feeling good, but not for increase. So when we meet somebody that we don't know, that is not like us, really quick, we try to determine, is this person adding value in the direction that we want to go? Or is this person adding value in a direction that we don't want to go? And immediately, we will try to figure that out and put them into the corresponding box. It's either they add value in the direction we want to go, or they add value in a direction that we don't want to go. If we don't want to go, what do? We avoid those people. Now, how do we do that? How do we perceive that value so fast? Predominantly, it's through sight. So for seeing individuals, sight is your dominant sense factor, second only to intuition, to energy. So sight can be broken up based on distraction, based on movement, based on a lot of factors that are going on. Energy is constant. When we're in the energy field of someone that can add value to our life, we instantly know it, but we don't know why we know it. You'll hear people describe this. They'll say, I just had a feeling this was the right person. I just had a feeling about this person. On the opposite side of that, we get a feeling when we don't want to be around the bugger either, okay? Everybody's basically had an experience. This is one of the reasons why sales gets a bad rap all the time, because we've all had an experience where we've been around a slimy salesperson, and there was nothing necessarily physically that determined that, but it was that feeling. Like, I don't know, I just had a slimy feeling about this person. I wanted to get the hell out of there. Beat feet in a new path, right? We just wanted to get out of the situation. Realize that it is that intuitive factor that is tipping you off to what's literally going on energetically with that other individual. So a lot of those decisions are made and determined by the way that we feel in the presence of that person. Again, this is important for you to know, because you want to be a person that is giving off the vibration of increase in a good way, so that people recognize that and they're literally drawn to you as a person that can help them get where the hell that they want to go in life. What complicates that is that if your mind is split, if you're both in fear about what's happening, if you're in doubt and worry about what's happening, if you're in indecision about what's happening, you're not confident in where you're going, and you're giving off a vibrational message to other people that basically says, stay the hell away from me because I don't know what I'm doing. Those people will attract other people that don't want to do anything either, okay? But to the person that's looking to go somewhere, they will be repelled by that, and they will go somewhere else. Where it really comes into an issue is where people are conflicted. They're not bad people. They're just conflicted. They do have fear going on. They do have worry going on. They do have uncertainty going on in the moment, but they are trying to do something good. You do something good much faster if you reconcile the energy inside of yourself so that it harmonizes basically in a straight line with a very specific direction, and that's the direction of growth. You can't have one foot in the safe sandbox and one foot in the growth sandbox at the same time. Like, it'll split you in half. You're not going anywhere, right? So how do we get that in that way? Well, basically, if you've been listening to what we've been teaching, it is really practicing the mindset around the ideas of how do we become certain in an uncertain time, which we've gone over and over and over. And now, how do we align our mind with the direction of expansion, really adapting to the situation, and we begin to expand in our life? And that's where understanding that if you're not thinking about your ability to do it, if you're not recognizing how the need has changed and adapt to that need, then it's causing you by default to actually be in nervous energy because you're uncertain and you don't know exactly what's going to happen. So you're afraid to put your stake in the ground anywhere because there's so much uncertainty. That's the worst thing that we can do. The best thing that we can do is to align that energy in a direction that where we can actually do something and pick something. Pick one or two things that you're going to start taking action on and begin to test that to see if it's going to work right now. And do it with a solidified energy in the direction. You also move into the idea of acceptance, which we've talked about many times. We have to accept what happened, right? But we don't have to let it define us. So we're going to go in the direction of least resistance around this. And that is to accept, you know, the expansion that is actually happening, but not in a not in like an emotional way, not in like a way that adds, not in a chaotic way. We're looking to expand based on what is that first law of the law of compensation dictates. It says the need for what you do, the need for what you do. You have to really determine, is the need the same as it was before? Is the distribution the same as it was before? Has it changed? How has it changed? What could be blocking this need for people? I'm also hearing a lot of, well, people just don't have money right now. People they're afraid to spend money, so they're not looking at my need as something that's relevant in their life right now. Your responsibility as a business owner and communicating with these individuals is to really determine. So is it that they don't need it, or it's not in the hierarchy of what's important, so they're not doing it right now? The idea is that you help them understand what's actually blocking them in that place in the moment. Because if you can actually show them the benefit of what's happening instead of them focusing on the detriment because they don't know what's going on, you will find that more and more of those customers actually come into agreement with the direction that you want to go. But it really helps if you're confident in the direction that you're going. If you're wishy-washy, if you're in the mindset of what I talked about a few weeks ago when I was saying there's a lot of people out there around have a lot of shame and guilt going on, and there's a lot of shaming and guilting going on around people that are running their businesses right now, people that are profiting, people that are moving forward. In other words, if you haven't gone into the sandbox of doom and gloom, all of those individuals are going to try to drag you in by making you out to be some kind of monster because you decided not to accept this situation and have your life destroyed by it, but you were going to thrive by helping other people. do so. You can't let that in your mind either. You have to be very solid. When we help other people, that expands throughout the whole universe. That expands through our economy. You become part of the overall solution. The more people that do that, the more we all benefit from it. So you want to be a person of increase, and you do that by really getting yourself together in integrity with the direction that you want to go and making the determination that that is exactly what's going to happen, and you're not going to be sucked in by outside comments around what you should be doing or shouldn't be doing. And you're not going to let the crisis build a wall or a fence around the way that you think. You're still going to think for yourself, and you're going to find a way out. You're going to find a way through, and you're going to find a way to advance. Okay, Steph, if you want to open this up for questions, that sounds good to me.
All right, David, ready for the first question?
Yes, ma'am.
First question is coming from Chris. He asks, what does Waddles mean by purpose?
In what context, Chris? By purpose, he means by the what is your purpose? Like, a person has to be very aware of your purpose. There is also the purpose of the universe, which is more life. It's always expanding. But the universe always works in circulation also. So you have life come up and then life come down, but the modus operandi is life. So it must circulate. Life feeds life, feeds life. We call that life and death, but it's not. It's just different stages of life in and of itself. The purpose is to lift all of life at the same time. And our purpose is to add to life. And as we add to life, we add to our own life.
Next question. This one's coming from Blair. In the Santa analogy, you mentioned that being good does not influence receiving. What are the influences for receiving?
Well, let's just talk about money so it's something that everybody understands. Money operates on the law of cause and effect. The only thing in the universe that moves money, the cause of money moving, is sales. Sales causes money to move from one hand to another hand. Even if you say, David, loan me $20, that's a sale. And I do it, that's a sale. It's the only thing that moves money is sales. So often people attach other causes in their mind to earning money. You have to think about what you understand, not just understand as an intellectual concept, but how is it integrated into your nervous system? If you were raised middle class or lower middle class like I was, you were built, your life consisted of going to school and then getting a job, and then you go work for somebody else and you get a paycheck every week or every 2 weeks or however you got paid. What's being integrated into your mind is that if I go and I spend time doing this skill set, I get paid. But the truth is, that's not what moves money. That is not what moves money. So if I want to increase my pay, if I'm stuck in that skill set, I will always approach it from the idea that I have to work harder. And that's why you see people get stuck, because they're like, I'm working so hard, where's the money? And right in front of them, you can look at what they're doing and the math doesn't even add up. But unconsciously, they think, if I just work harder, I'm going to make more money. So that is the only thing that moves money, is sales. So when we're thinking of sales, we also have to think of the second law of sales is leverage. And leverage is, we're either leveraging time or we're leveraging people, or we're leveraging money itself. And basically those are the only three ways that we actually earn money in the world. So depending on how you want to earn money, you have to decide what works best for you and your skill set and how you're going to actually leverage it. Like number one, leveraging time, trading time for money is the worst way to earn money. You can leverage it by trading a skill set that's more valuable. That's a way to earn more money. You can leverage it by trading technology or systems. That's a way to earn more money. You can leverage it by trading money to make money. But trading your personal time specifically for money and not purpose is the worst thing.
Thank you. Next question is coming from Becca. So I hear you saying spot the opportunity instead of creating an opportunity. What's the difference in identifying an opportunity and creating one?
I don't think there is a difference, because even if you create one, you have to identify in where it's going to work. Who are the people that are going to benefit from the opportunity, and how is that opportunity going to be seen or marketed and received? So I'm sorry if my language was confusing, but I actually mean the same thing. There is a difference between creating something that does not exist versus morphing something that does, okay? In morphing that something that does, there is an aspect of creation to it, agreed. But you're also looking for how does what I currently have fit into this new model? So there's also a transference that goes on there. So we can either create it from nothing, we can recreate what we already have, but in both cases, we have to spot the opportunity as to where it's going to do good and be received.
Thank you. Next question is coming from Lori. So are you saying not to lump all attorneys together? What about an attorney who does personal injury and there are far less car crashes and criminal law attorneys who represent people charged with DUI and no bars open?
Right. There's far less. There's not none. There was a 54 car pileup in Illinois. I think it was yesterday or today. There's not none. There may be less. I'll give you that. But there's not none.
Question from Lisa. How do we create the impression of increase to others?
By being the impression of increase, by being the increase. And there's a big difference between acting like you have the increase, like let me have the hot car, but there's nothing behind it, or let me have the big shell house, but there's nothing behind it, or the fancy clothes or whatever. But people they really know, and in and of itself, there's nothing wrong with those things. Those are great things. But it is, are you a person of increase? Do you have the knowledge and the skill and the know-how to back up what you say you can increase in other people's lives? Because when you do that, you walk it, you talk it, you deliver it, you live it every single day, and people know that. You can tell when somebody's full of shit, you know? You just can. Almost everybody on the planet knows when they're around somebody that is completely full of shit. You can smell it a mile away.
That is 100% truth right there. Okay, next question is coming from Nicole. I think I misunderstood willpower. So it's not about strength or force as much as it is about focus.
Yes, common misconception. I grew up with the same thing. Willpower is not about force. It is about focus. It is 100% focus. It is your ability to hold your focus without deviation. And for a lot of people, that is a big challenge. But it's also a mental muscle, Nicole. It really is. If we work on it, we can actually make it stronger. Now, I also have another thing about this that I think is important. I don't want to get too deep into it because I really could go an hour or so just on this idea. I think that if we do what we love, it doesn't take any willpower at all to be focused on it. And I think that if everybody would realize that, it is one of the biggest wake-up calls you could ever have in your life, because when you're doing what you love, you don't have to make yourself do it.
Next question is coming from Jenny. David, you mentioned that we need to be able to reconcile ourselves internally. What are the signs the congruence isn't there, and how do we move towards it?
Doubt, fear, and worry. If there's incongruence there, I'll guarantee you, you'll have doubt, fear, and worry show up in your life. And the reason for that is that you don't have clarity. That the human mind does not like confusion. It doesn't. It always moves away from confusion. Incidentally, That's one of the reasons why when we're about to do something that triggers an unconscious pattern to have you stop doing something, like it goes into fear, it tries to get you to move away from something that would cause you to change, it will often present confusion as the first flash into your mind. Because if we're confused, we're not certain. And the human being does not like to be in a pattern of uncertainty. It always wants to move to certainty. So there you go.
So this question came in after you did the explanation of the impression of inquiry. So I'm going to ask it just for clarification's sake. This is from Patty. I want to be a person that exhibits the impression of increase for good. What steps will get me on that track?
Consistent growth. I want you to think about your statement. Your statement is so that I don't ever have to worry about it again. Really, that's what you're saying. There is no for good in life. There is like death, maybe, but really that's about it. But when I hear that comment all the time, I just want it to stop. I just want to get there. I just want to be a millionaire. I just want this change to be permanent. That is a fallacy. It doesn't exist. Why? Because we're always changing and the world is always changing. What has to be permanent, and it's permanent by choice, not by pattern, and that is the idea that self-growth is going to be a value in your life, and it's going to be probably your number one value in your life, that you're always paying attention to this thing called me in a way where I'm always working to be the best me that I can. If we took care of ourselves like we take care of our dogs, like we take care of our children, like we take care of somebody that we love, we would be amazing people. But a lot of us have taught to put everybody else first and put ourselves last. And when we do that, we deteriorate. So I understand what you're saying. I understand that you want that. The way to maintain it is like you would maintain anything else in your life. You keep it fresh, you keep it clean, you focus on it, you give it attention, you realize when it's breaking down, you build it back up, you replace parts, you know, you wash it, you love it, you hug it, you squeeze it. That's how you do it. You pay attention to it. Anything in your life that you don't pay attention to is going to fall apart, including the impression of increase. And you stay relevant. I think that's important to put in there too, Steph. You have to stay relevant in yeah. Because if you're being what was an impression of increase in 1820, nobody's going to recognize that today. You have to be relevant with the times and the needs of the times.
Yes, agreed. Okay, next question. This is a little bit long, so stick with me. This is from Alex. One of the opportunities I see as a way to pivot in my business is to launch an online yoga membership platform. I'm really excited about this. I feel that it meets a massive need to reclaim power over our mind-body, but I stopped myself because I realized I would need roughly 150 to 200 members to meet my minimum needs now, and that feels impossible in the short term, but possible in the future, perhaps 10 to 12 months from now, not in 30 days. Does this mean that there is another opportunity for me, or should I work on my mindset and go after it? Or is there another thing to consider here?
Well, I would also ask you, relative to what? Like, what are you doing now? Is there a reason you can't start that and start to build toward it? And whatever you're doing now to bring money into your life, you maintain that until you can get to a point where you flip over and you just decide to do the yoga thing. If you don't start it, you'll never get there. That part I can tell you. So however long it takes, that's how long it takes. If you can't spend all of your time doing it, then don't spend all of your time doing it. Spend part of your time doing it and work at it really hard until you get it to the point where you can stop doing whatever you're currently doing to bring money in. But don't wait. You have the idea now. It's meant to be put to use now. Do it.
David, I think, you know, we've seen this with a number of people where they'll say, well, I don't think I can hit my goal right now, so I'm going to wait to start this. But the truth is that if you start it, you might become aware of another opportunity that you wouldn't have been made aware of if you hadn't started it.
Very true. Very true. I totally agree with that. There never will, here's another illusion that the human mind creates, the right time. The right time. The right time is an expression of fear in disguise. There never is a right time. Well, actually, that's not true. The right time is always now, right? But there's never a right time based on what you perceive to be the right time. And the reason is because every minute of your life is taken up by something else. And whenever we bring something new in our life, we're automatically saying, I'm going to move something to allow room for this to come in. So it's a matter of priority, not about timing, okay? It's never about timing. It's always priority.
Thank you. This is from Frank. I see a need. I completely believe in the need. However, not clear if people see their need. Is this intuition to run with or magical thinking? Do I go out there to sell regardless? I think yes, but wanted to get your thoughts on this.
Absolutely. Your job then as a salesperson is to help identify the need within them so that they understand it, right? That's all sales is anyway, if you're doing it correctly. It's about helping a person to become congruent on their yes or their no. It's not about manipulation into a yes. It is helping remove the barriers in their mind so they can get to a clear yes or a clear no, and you will get the people that actually really want the product or service. So when you do that, Frank, it's about helping them uncover the need that they have for whatever it is that you have.
Okay, David, last question. This is from Ruslan. We teach ballroom dance lessons. Right now, many students have cut down or cut out on dance lessons, stating that it's due to money concerns. How to explain to students that you want them to take lessons for them for their benefit so they do not forget how to dance properly versus sounding that you are aggressively trying to push them to pay money. We have also tried to offer free group lessons, but the turnout is not that high. We have tried to explain that it is possible to take virtual lessons.
Yes. So I think it's about having a conversation with them about why they wanted to take lessons in the first place and reminding them of how important that is. You know, when we do something like take ballroom dance lessons, there's something about that for the individual that wants to do something like that that brings great value into their life. I think it's about reminding them that their life is now. The only time that we've got guaranteed is now. And that should be just as important as it was at any other time of their life. And you will have some people that will get that and they will do it and some people that won't. I think the longer that this goes, the more people that you'll have that are going to be like, okay, I'm going to do it. You got to remember, this is still relatively new, but we're starting to move into a phase where people are starting to get a little bit used to it. So that means that people will kind of settle in a little bit. They'll kind of settle in for the long haul, but they're getting stir crazy. They want to do something in their life except look at the walls of their house. This is where it would require you to have more conversations to get the same results as you did last time. That's all it is. And you have to be willing to do that. That's it. Listen, you can do it with people all over the world. The world's your oyster with this, right? Because anybody that's got a computer you can do dance lessons with. So you got the whole world. Don't tell me you don't have enough people to contact.
Thanks, David. Okay. That is the end of our questions. And we are just a little bit short of time. So fantastic. Great. Any last words for this group before we say goodbye for this week?
Just understand what you do, your ability to do it, and where that need is for other people, and you'll do really great. And if you need one of us to jump on a phone call with you or you need help in some way, make sure that you reach out. We have all different kinds of options and ways that we can do that. Other than that, have a blessed day. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Successful Mind Podcast. And if you like what you heard and you want to know more, go to davidnagel.com/freestuff.